Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Did you know Toyota of Brookhaven has sold more new vehicles the last 2 years than any other dealership in Southwest Mississippi? Come see why. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota of Brookhaven, we deliver.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome, welcome. This is the Garden Mama Show on Super Talk Mississippi. Thank you so very much for being here today. Good morning, Lance.
Buenos dias, Garden Mama. How's it going?
Oh, today is a very good day. Today is the day when those of you, like me, who have basically established that the spirit animal is, in fact, the squirrel. We have pecans in our freezer from last year, and since they're all ripening now, getting ready for the fall harvest, today is National Pecan Pie Day. So, and I know there's a reason behind this.
I'll eat a pecan pie.
It's the perfect day. It's the perfect day. So I encourage everyone to enjoy that.
Are you a pumpkin pie fan?
Yeah, I like sweet potato better. But yeah.
Oh, okay. Somebody the other day was threw a fit about the sweet potatoes. I was like, come on, man. Took me till I was grown. And my dad finally talked me into one at deer camp. He goes, boy, wait, what is your problem? You know, and then finally,
why is this prejudice on you?
What is going on here? I mean, you're a grown man. And I finally tried one with like a lot of pepper. Yeah. I was like, oh man, a sweet potato. What in the world is this treat?
Entirely different. Yeah.
And I passed by Calhoun City and Vardaman many years blowing through there. And yeah, to heck with those old yams. But now, man. Yeah.
I had never seen them in any fashion other than, frankly, enveloped in pineapple and marshmallow, and I didn't think I liked them either.
My mamma had them, had it set up like that. You know, you had the pies and everything.
They are. And then, of course, they were just trying to get everybody to eat them, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah. I never really was big on the sweet potato pie, but, you know, I learned.
It is a wonderful vegetable. Thank goodness we grow the best ones in the world.
We do. You know? And in Africa, I studied, you know, back in the college years, I think it was sophomore year, I was taking like an anthropology class.
Yeah.
And spent like a pretty much a bulk of that on Africa. And it was talking about, I remember the lesson being about, they used yams as currency. And the guy that had like the biggest pile outside of the, you know, the area, you know, he was kind of the big guy. I'm like, man, that's all, you know, having that many yams, what are you doing? Well, you traded them. They were, you know, it was kind of like currency. So I found that fascinating.
Well, and what you're looking at, of course, is the phenomenon that human beings have always done. The Phoenicians, before they started printing coins, did shells because theirs were better than everybody else's.
The prettiest shells.
You know, and in Holland, of course, tulip mania was all about the value of that little bulb.
Didn't we show that graphic at one time where it's like the tulip craze and the price just skyrocketed
the moon. Very first one I ever read about was that one bulb was worth a house full of furniture.
Yeah.
And everything beyond that just got even crazier because people were so obsessed. They were just frankly obsessed. Great text to start us off today from Christy in Baldwin. Nice pictures, too, by the way. Can you tell me why my hydrangeas are blooming further inside the bush instead of on the outside? Did I prune incorrectly? Ding, ding, ding. You got it. Here's what happens. The traditional hydrangeas that we're talking about here, the large leaf or French hydrangeas or mop head, as they are called sometimes because they have that big round flower, all of those bloom on the wood that they created last year, at least the first time of bloom. Because, yes, the ones that rebloom then put on flowers on the new growth that they are putting out during that current season. But the first bloom on all of those, and particularly on the older shrubs that only bloom once, happens on the wood that grew last year. So if you prune, as my grandmother did sometimes because they were in her way, at odd times of the year, hydrangeas will have flowers all over them. They'll be on the top, they'll be on the bottom, they'll be on the side. But to get that uniformity of flowering, you need to bloom right after the first flush of flowers each spring, well, summer, by the time they bloom for me. Really, really nice, though. And the white ones are not hydrangeas. She sent another picture, but yes, I think you pruned that a little bit late as well. It's just the same principle. We're blooming on old wood, the wood that we grew last year. So that's nice. Paula, hello, Paula. Thank you very much. She's headed to work today.
Oh, you know it. Yeah.
And it's a good day for all the many, many things that Paula does. I was going to say, keeping the dogs happier and better looking, frankly.
And cooler this time of year.
And this time of year. Oh,
yeah, the heat indexes are in the 99s to 100s today. I don't know how it is in the southern part of the U.S.
Oh, yeah,
of A. Yeah, you're in the same. I figured it was at least 10 degrees
warmer. We
may
rain twice. That's about the only difference. My best dog in my life, no offense to the others, but my best dog in my life came from Starkville, and she was a Samoyed. Now, you say to yourself, why would anybody raise Samoyeds in a place that's as hot as Starkville? You know, well, because they're beautiful and they're wonderful dogs and they're very, very kind and very, very sweet. But I was always really glad that she could, in fact, reflect light and heat off of her, because she had tremendous exposure to sunlight and whatnot and did shed a lot. But, you know, people weave all of that into hats and sweaters and scarves, and it's an amazing source of, not wool, but essentially wool from those dogs. So maybe that's why we grow them in the South, so we can have a better harvest.
I had a story a couple of weeks ago about North Korean soldiers. They actually have dog fur-lined jackets, and they're extremely high-end.
My goodness, that's frightening.
It's a big deal over there. So they're using
that. Down that road, friends. Don't start sending me texts about all that. Y'all keep that in Lance's other world. This is the sweet kind.
Oh, no. I just found it fascinating that they used the hair, you know, and made it's because I have plenty of it. It's what I was kind of going with. I have a lab that sheds. Goodness gracious. And I haven't found a use for it yet. But if anyone knows of one,
back in the day, you know, they used to stuff cushions and couches and mattresses and things with all of that because I think they were trying to find something to do with it. So that's how that worked. Oh, dear me. Ray and Clinton. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Baked sweet potatoes with brown sugar and butter. He's on that one. I'm not going to turn that down. Stupid question of the day. There are no stupid questions. Ray, you know, sometimes I give stupid answers, but there are no stupid questions. When planting a peach seed, does the sharp side go up or down? Can't figure that out. I've tried both with no success. All right, I'm going to tell you why. More than likely, you're taking the peach pit and the seed itself, which is inside that hard outside, is not getting out. So you can cut them a little bit and start that process of, or you can soak them. But the main thing people do with peach seeds is to put them into a cold treatment in their refrigerator, wrapped up in wet sphagnum moss, and yes, hopefully a Ziploc bag or some such thing, so it doesn't get in the rest of your food. But you need to give them the cold treatment, and that's going to change everything for you. I'm going to tell you that I don't honestly think it'll be a surprise. The roots will come out of that of the end you're not thinking about, but it won't be that. It'll be the seed inside the peach. Does that make any sense? I hope so. I sincerely hope so. I have visited once in my life the Point Reyes National Seashore. It is in north of San Francisco in Marin County on the Pacific Ocean side, and it is wild and beautiful and terrific. It has also been the inspiration of a lot of things, including the Maritime Radio Historical Society, or the MRHS. That's right. Today is the day. Tonight is the night of nights. This is the night that the last commercial message was sent by Morse code. Now, people still tap, tap, you know, people still do that, but they don't do it as much. So, for example, the historic Morse code radio station KPH there in Point Reyes returns to the air for a day and transmits in Morse code from 5:01 in the afternoon until midnight. So it's really exciting for folks who are into Morse code. And if you were in the Scouts, you learned a little bit of it somewhere along the way, because it was one of those things that they taught everybody. But I just think it's really cool. They also have a very large party. So needless to say, good reason to celebrate the Night of Nights. Pretty fun. I could do that. We learned Morse code, and it distracted some of our teachers along the way. They didn't like us tapping out messages to one another, but we did it anyway. Are you ready for the fall garden? You know, it's July, friends. It's time. Oh, my goodness. Is it really? Yes, it really is. Let's talk about a few things. First of all, when it comes to the fall garden, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about a wonderful opportunity to plant or replant just about everything that we were even thinking of growing in the spring, which may or may not have done well. We had a lot of water, so we had some things that did beautifully. A lot of people, though, have said that their tomatoes didn't ripen correctly or never did ripen, or they had more bugs or any different set of problems, of course, not only including blight. And that's something that is less dominant in the summer garden going into fall. So if that's been your problem, you may want to be glad to try again. We also have the opportunity to do a little bit more to the soil if we've been, for example, wanting to grow broccoli and cabbage and kale and those kinds of things. This is a great time to begin adding some more organic matter to the garden bed or to the pots and put in a little fertilizer and give them the opportunity to get really ready, have to mellow out, as they say, before you plant in a couple of weeks. On the other hand, if you're starting your own seeds for those things, today's the day. Get busy, because you really do need to get them going right away. Whether it might be kale, it might be broccoli, it might be cabbage, might be Brussels sprouts. All of those things have a point in the fall where they're going to be better than they are in the springtime. And if you want to start some seeds, now's a good time to do that. Just a couple of tips on that seed starting. You do it inside. Some people will seed directly out into the garden, and that works for some folks. I have had much better success going ahead and starting the plants in small containers indoors for the fall garden. So I would suggest, if you grow only in containers, for example, look for choices that are not gigantic, that are not elephant kale, that are going to be kale that's a little bit smaller and will be easier to grow in a container. Just in the same way that when it comes time to think about it, you'll be looking at collards and other greens that are not the gigantic ones, but might be mesclunes or might be some other mixes of mustards and things that are going to do better in a container. But it's also time to be thinking about your timing and your choices and putting in a few things. The main problem, whether it's tomatoes or broccoli, it doesn't really matter, eggplants, peppers, you know, you may be getting close into the time where you want to put out some mustards and collards in September, for example, but you're getting ready for that now. You're still going to need to have water available, and I'm going to suggest that you go ahead and invest in a timer, particularly if you're going to transplant out into the garden in the hot weather. That lets you put just a little bit of water on them to prevent their wilting without actually overshading and slowing down their growth. If you do have an area that is unavailable to water, and you have to start some plants, maybe you're going to grow, maybe you got pumpkins started up there, do a reservoir, or consider a little bit of shade for a cloche. It will be easier to grow them for the fall garden. Don't forget your soil prep. Don't forget to get ready for all of that. If you need to do it today. Today will be a great day for that. You know, Lance, I am really curious about this. I don't know, I wish I did, but I don't know. I had no idea that fish hovered, first of all. That was the biggest problem. I read the headline and went, hovering fish. I didn't know that was a description. University of California, San Diego, they're not loafing. Hovering fish are actually, they're making microfin tweaks. When you see them being still in the water in a tank, for example, where you might be watching them, they're not being still. They have microfin flicks or tweaks that counteract that contribute to their buoyancy, that keep them from tipping, which would be the natural tendency. And in fact, the body of shape of the fish itself really depends, you know, determines a whole lot of how this works. The discovery of understanding that the hovering of it uses twice the energy of actually resting is the big development from UC San Diego this week. This is absolutely upside down. Anybody who's ever taken even a little bit of knowledge or learning from another fisherman or going to some class somewhere or just even observing it, you would tend to think that effortless neutral buoyancy would be the thing. In other words, that just being there would be the opportunity to be buoyant and stay there. Well, it doesn't. It really, really doesn't. Why are we studying fish? Because we want underwater robots that can do the same things. That's why. So they're working on it. I don't know if they're going to get it or not, but they are sure working on it.
I can tell you, it sounds like they're good at treading water. You know,
well, and that's why, you know, that's why you would think you could see it happening. Mm-hmm. But until they measure the waves, like, because it's the water, we're going to measure the sound waves and the visible waves around the fish, you don't even see it because it's a micro movement.
Micro.
And
you
then,
can't tell they're doing anything.
You
but
can't
they're
tell
doing
they're
stuff.
Doing anything. And in fact, they're using twice as much energy as if they were just asleep. So yeah. The idea that they're resting to gain energy for something else, which is, of course, you know, I'm sure my grandfather said that, oh, they're just resting, you know. Well, no, they're not.
Yeah, they're working on their abs.
Exactly.
Staying in shape, you know.
they're
always working.
They are keeping it together.
You would wonder, I mean, and that's a good point, because there's always like some type of current in the water. I mean, mm-hmm. other than maybe some little small tank, even then, there's probably some circulatory nature. So them sitting there still would require effort.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you
it's
would
like
think
a bird in the wind.
You would hope that it would be natural buoyancy, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's actually.
Like Paula says, at least they're not lollygagging.
No, they're not lollygagging.
Lollygaggers. No.
What a wonderful word.
Yeah, I love it.
Love that
favorite.
One.
Used so well, too, in so many movies, but the one, yeah, lollygaggers. You don't want, what is it, Rookie of the Year? I think that's the one.
I think that is right. Gosh, you know all of those. I don't know all of
well,
those.
It's a baseball movie.
I know
come
that.
On.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's, you know, let's go with a natural.
Oh, I haven't seen that one ever, Nellie, ever. That,
really?
We watched that before every game until I was probably 20.
I was going to say, you probably had to see that a couple of times.
Yeah, that was ritual. You know how you do things in the garden?
Oh, sure.
Always the same way. Well, us baseball players, we were a little bit superstitious, so. The natural became kind of the thing.
Yeah. I'm not even going to go down that road because I know too much about it, too. Yeah. I will tell you, though, that in addition to the pecan pie we're going to eat this afternoon, my friends, July is National Ice Cream Month. Now, come on.
You better enjoy it while you can, because July will be gone in just a minute.
Yeah. We're middle of the way through, which is why I'm older and my cats are happier, you know, something about that warm weather. I can almost hear in the background that it's time for me to say
it
something.
It is, but I had to say thank you for correcting me. It's Bull Durham, a baseball movie. Yeah, it wasn't Rookie of the Year. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the compliment, y'all. We appreciate you. We will be back.
So fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat looking for a kitty. Gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop. Running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Just like the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
From our view on this farm, food security is national security. Our nation must have a sustainable food source. Keeping the supply chain moving and food on our grocery store shelves by growing the cleanest food in the world.
We're only one of thousands, but we are united as one to grow the food, fiber, and shelter you need every day because Mississippi needs us. Mississippi needs farmers, the farm families of Mississippi.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
No, but I mean what I said. No, no. And take it the wrong way. No, you can't go on getting the wrong way. Cause if you do, it's going to get you someday.
Ah, yes, indeed. The famous Bunny and Delaney are telling us all about it this morning, y'all. This is the Garden Mama Show. We welcome your calls and your texts. Love seeing your photos at supertalk.tv. And you know what? Nathan has solved his problem. I love this. Good morning. I was late planting squash. This morning I found out I definitely didn't need 8 plants. That's great. Anyway, he says he struggled the last few years with bugs, so it doubled up. Now the neighbors are being blessed. That's right. Right up until the neighbors walk away from you when you approach with the squash. But I say congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah. You live and learn, right? Nathan's he's down there in that good dirt, too, Smith County.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yes, yes, we should talk watermelons at some point.
Oh, please, yes. Any time is a good time for that.
I have yellow and red in the refrigerator right now.
Is there a grand difference as you get further toward the coast in the type of sandy soil that you would get in growing melons? Would it make a grand difference?
Everybody likes what they like.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody likes the particular texture or the particular sweet level or whatever it is that folks are into. So that's I think it really does depend on... It depends as much on the grower as it does on anything else when it comes to watermelons. These are very orange, and they're very beautiful, but just lovely, lovely, delicious, sweet. Has a different flavor. Garden Mama, Rich at the Res, wants to know, when is the best time to trim encore azaleas? After they bloom? Mm-hmm. Any after they bloom. In other words, primarily we prune encores after the first bloom in the springtime. But if you miss it, you can still, when they start putting on a few more flowers in July, you can prune them then. I'm not going to prune them after the fall bloom unless there's something wrong with the plant that I'm trying to correct. Like, for example, I've never seen an encore do this, but if it threw out one long branch that was in your way or that was not contributing to the design of the area, you might take off that whole thing in the fall. But otherwise, I'm just going to do the little deadheading that needs to be done, keep them healthy and happy, and let them continue blooming. You can also fertilize them after you cut the flowers in the first time. And if you're trying to get the plants to grow some more, sure, go ahead and do it the second time too. But that's enough fertilizer for them. Definitely. Rich, I know they're beautiful. Wonder what color. I should have made him tell me. Aw, zinnias and sweet little girls with sun hats. That is why I plant flowers. I believe that's a good reason myself. Yeah,
those are tall zinnias, and that's a cutie pie out there having a big time. They're learning young what pretty things are.
It is fun. Yeah. It is fun. And the I'll tell you the best thing that can happen when they're this age and that curiosity level. My entire property became, for a few years, covered up in literally black-eyed Susans because of the grabbing of the noses on them that the kids did and moved them all over the yard. So it does help. It's, you know, they're very busy. They may or may not have a plan, but they're very busy.
I grew up with an artist grandmother that painted flowers, so that reminded me of me, not just in the sun. You know, I wasn't in the dress and the hat, but being surrounded by...
I bet you were in the hat.
Yeah, I probably had whatever she put on me.
Yep, but she put a hat on you.
Learning how to paint and to, you know, sit there and look and study and be aware of the complexity of the flowers that you were looking at and the different angles and the shades and the colors was and I was a little bitty like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time I showed up, I just couldn't wait to get there and paint and see what she was up to. But that brought back some memories because it's just, yeah, when you're that young, it never leaves you. You know, that's such a great treat for a young one.
And I say it as a joke. I say, you know, if you can just get a kid to put seeds in their hand one time, you know, bean seeds or corn seeds or something before they're 5 years old, we've got them. They may not come back to it until they've gotten out of college and grown up a little bit. But if we can get them to touch the dirt with a seed in it, they're going to see something that they didn't see before and they're going to like it. And I think that is universal. I really do. Rich says that they are red and white. His encore azaleas, nice choices. Really beautiful plants. Wonderful plants. I love that. Oh no, I'm not gonna tell you why I thought it was Bull Durham. Let's just say I'm a Susan Sarandon fan.
Yeah, I can't believe that I wasn't awake enough to get that. I was thinking Rookie of the Year with Daniel Stern
being
the crazy one, but it was
which
the coach.
He plays very well.
Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, my goodness.
Bull Durham is a classic. I play the Frank Sinatra "That's Life" at least once a week, you know, because that's the song Susan
yes.
Sarandon. You know,
yes.
She has.
Yes, she does.
And she owns that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, and this is a funny one. We won't get to speak and hang out till next Saturday, but there's two really interesting days that are coming up: National Nude Day and then National Tape Measure Day, are both.
No, don't put those together.
They're both on Monday. I figured you'd like that. So, yeah, I was hoping that it was like Gardening Day, too, all on the same, like National Nude Day, Tape goodness. Measure Day, and Gardening, but we didn't get that.
Thank goodness.
So, yeah.
Oh, my
At any
goodness.
Rate.
That's terrible. You know that it's two different groups that pick those things.
Yeah, there has to be, yeah.
But
you wanted a correlation.
It's definitely.
Well, you nailed it with the Blueberry Day.
I have to say, there are. There's a whole lot of body shaming that does not get to be done.
Mm.
On the other hand, there's some that I'm happy to do myself. So
right. Well, I mean,
it's a very human thing to make those judgments.
Well, we had Blueberry Muffin Day was Friday, and
yeah.
then today is Pecan Pie Day.
Pecan Pie Day. Come on.
But the one that
tell
really
me the South doesn't lead in the food world.
right. So we won that one. The Friday is the American Pet Photo Day. So did anybody out there take a great photo of their pet yesterday in their garden and want to share it with us?
Because you saw mine.
I saw it. Yeah, and Mark sent his with the frisbee too. So
good. That's fun. Here is a great question and one that so many people are seeing. Sarah's in Monroe County. My gardenia leaves are yellowing. Do I need to repot it? It's been in this pot for 2 or 3 years. Yes, I would be confident that it has used up every bit of nutrition that this container has for it. And the reason that your leaves are yellow on the bottom is because the plant's roots are trying so hard to keep the ones at the leaves at the top from turning yellow. Because that's the plant as it gives up its nitrogen to the leaves above it. So I would repot it and fertilize it. You can plant it in the ground if you have the opportunity to do that, but it will certainly be easier to make a transition to a larger container and then get some fertilizer that is made for gardenias, the gardenias, azaleas, camellias, hollies, that's going to help form the acid that the soil needs. Make sure that your potting soil is rich in organic matter, but will drain as well, and your gardenia will look a whole lot better in about a month.
One question in tandem with that: how big would you go up? That looked like a pretty mature one in that squared pot, which I have several of those that I use. Once you outgrow a pot, what's the rule of thumb to how big you want to go up?
Well, if you're trying to get the pot to be the home for the plant forever, you go up maybe a size or two sizes larger, in other words, an inch bigger around. And I'm going to go at least an inch bigger around for this because I want this thing to stay in here for 10 years.
Okay, good deal.
And plus, when you go to dig it out, if your roots have already worked their way into the container itself, you know that you've got to trim them a little bit, and they are going to need more space.
That was going to be my next question. You know, if you have the bundled up, they've been really bunched up, and they're kind of growing back into the bundle, do you trim those? Do you pull all that out and then trim them out so that they get a little healthier?
Yep, you can trim them a little bit. You also have to do a corresponding amount of pruning on the top of the plant to keep it in balance.
I've always been worried about that when you repot. What do I do with all these roots that really want to, you know, unfurl?
You kind of have to look the other way and cut through them.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like guys.
Like so many things.
Think
of them as knotted up shoestrings. Okay. They're not doing you any good, okay? And if the plant is not doing well and the roots are bound like that, that's generally speaking the problem.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Because the plumbing's not working.
Yeah.
You can't get any water. So, but this plant looks beautiful.
Oh, it's
it just
a beauty.
Looks like it needs to be rejuvenated a little bit.
Yeah, it's a nice looking
goodness.
Plant.
That's a beautiful Disney ginger.
<Isn't it? laughs>
I'm going to hope that this was not. This is Wanda and McHenry. I'm hoping this is the most beautiful orange. I'm so ecstatic about orange. That is just lovely. So pretty.
Got a great question there about tomatoes. Again, about can we freeze a celebrity tomato that has an abundance of them?
You know, it's interesting. The question has come up a couple of times about what to do. And we have had, I've literally had 4 emails this week since we talked about it last week. It was 2 weeks ago, so it's in the last 2 weeks. But the question is, what do you want to do? So some people really like to take the peels off of them. I don't find that celebrity in this particular variety of celebrity that we're talking about, I don't find that their skin is too thick. I just cook them. But some people just put them in the bag frozen and then take them out, and they are really easy to get the skin off of. If you want it off after they're frozen, you just throw them in hot water and the skin peels up immediately. It's really, throw them in boiling water. It's real simple. But some people prefer to get them peeled and then just basically take out some of the seeds and freeze that pulp. I don't do that. If I'm going to freeze the tomatoes, I might, if the skin seem thick, I might take the skins off. Otherwise, I'm just going to freeze them and then deal with them when it comes time to make something out of them. On the other hand, as Nathan says, he loves freezing his Creole and celebrity tomatoes, so he doesn't tell me how. But most people will do that whole. And so if you need tomato sauce recipes or tomato recipes in general, there are millions of them out there.
I got a good one for you.
Yeah.
We have a call from Robert in Ripley, and he has a similar issue with a lemon tree that is a Meyer lemon. Can't seem to get it healthy. It is a potted plant, and it is yellowing a bit, and he wanted to discuss that with you if you had a second.
Well, this is an unusual one because usually the Meyer lemons outdo everybody else. Good morning. There are a lot of choices when it comes to citrus. Growing it in a container is a really good idea.
And Robert, I got you on if you want to.
Okay, go
discuss.
Ahead, Robert.
There he is. Hey, Lance was telling you I have a Meyer lemon tree that was given to my wife. It has been last year we repotted it. I don't think the roots are the problem. Mm-hmm. When we brought it inside last winter, it did not fare well. Leaves fell off. Mm-hmm. It was looking pretty bare. So this spring we took it back outside. It perked up, put on lots of leaves. But now the leaves are starting to, some of them are starting to yellow a little bit again.
And what are you fertilizing with?
You can't overwater those pretty easily, and that they don't need to just have a lot of water, which we've kind of tried to watch that, but it's been natural. I mean, it's been taking whatever the rain is. It's just sitting out in the yard right now.
As long as your soil drains well in the container, the amount of rainfall that we get should not be a problem. But what are you fertilizing with?
My wife uses elm dirt, I think.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know. It's a liquid fertilizer of some sort.
Okay, I'm going to tell you how I have had success with Meyer and other lemon trees in containers, and it's really not very difficult because, trust me, I want the lemons, but I don't want to work too hard for them.
Yeah.
I like the trees, though. I think they're pretty. First of all, the fertilizer that I use for it is one that I hardly ever recommend a specific fertilizer, but I recommend this one. It is Espoma, Espoma, citrus food. It's an organic citrus food, but it is also complete for the citrus, and it provides the things that the citrus tree needs that other things don't necessarily need. I've had real good success with it. I fertilize them in the middle of the summer, and then before I'm going to bring it into the house for the fall, I do prune it a little bit because it is going to shed some leaves, and I don't want it to have to try to hold on to all of that year's growth. But the reason that we bring it in, of course, is so that we can keep it warm. So I do prune it back, put it in the sunniest place I can in the house, and sometimes I'll even give it an extra light. I don't water it as much in the wintertime, certainly, as it gets water in the summer. But with that summer fertilizing, I generally will get a really nice set of flowers around January or February. And so that, I think, is what you want to look for. Give yourself the chance to prune it before you put it in the house. Make sure you fertilize it this summer and then prune it a little bit before you take it in the house. And then as soon as it starts to bloom, go ahead and give it some fertilizer next spring and you'll be on your way. Okay?
Okay.
We're going to have to step aside. Okay, if you have more questions, I'll be glad to answer them. I'm Garden Mama and this is my show. Thanks for being here.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Propane uses for residential include cooking, heating, gas logs, outdoor products, water heaters, landscaping, and manufactured housing. Propane is a trusted, reliable source of energy that is used year-round by more than 60 million Americans. Visit mspropane.com to learn more. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's mspropane.com.
I'm here with David Brook.
Well, my feet can't fail me now. 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 My feet can't fail me now.
I like that. Goodness gracious. Welcome in. We're still messing with technical stuff here in the remote studio. I'm glad to tell you that, guess what? It's working. All right, Lance, is it better now?
Yeah, well, we got a little teal in there, but you know,
I see that.
Don't worry about it. I'll cut that. Yeah, I'll try to clip that out.
Y'all have no idea how it's really difficult, but he manages to stand on his head and juggle at the same time.
Well,
I don't really know.
I miss my dancing. I mean, when you were here, I was. It's a lot more fun. I'm dancing by myself.
I'll be there. I'll be in town in just a couple of weeks. So don't worry about that. I don't know what I'm looking at. In this particular person has found this in their yard, but I will look it up and figure it out. There's something familiar about these structures, but I don't know what they are.
Looks like some kind of fruit, you know. Like
on the other hand, Paula from Dentville has yet another orange cat for us to love on.
Oh, wow. I found a little gray one out in the courtyard yesterday. I went out in a break, and I noticed this fuzzy little furry thing laying over in the middle. I said, what is that?
Oh, my
went
goodness.
Over, and it was a little bitty
yet another
furry
kitty.
Gray. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's made it through the first round, I guess. You got Yeller, and you got Gray Mama and Captain, and I don't know who this is yet, but he's one of the siblings, I guess.
I think that there's a flock. I really do. Speaking of which, my friend, the cat whisperer, and she would not take that well if I said it. Cats, if you have a litter of cats in the central part of Mississippi, and you're a mother cat, and you know that, you know, you got to get them away from all of the predators and threats, you take them to her house.
Right.
Okay? That's just the way it is. And that, of course, is where Joy came from, the orange that we're so fond of. But they're continuing. It's turning into an avalanche of kittens. And that's just, you know, I wish people would understand that they've got to take care of the ones they've got, not just turn them loose. It's tough.
Well, and Joy is a sweetie. She's like a little dove.
She makes a lot of noises. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it when they talk to you.
She will tell you all about
She's an early morning talker. She loves to talk to you early in the morning. You hear her spinning around out there, running up and down.
She has a lot to say. Oh, We've got a lot going on. The cats that I have are establishing their territory in their new digs, and so that's kind of an adventure. That's, you know, they have this and that going on, which that's okay. But they, on the other hand, seem to be very attracted to social conflict. And I got to tell you, humans and monkeys and cats are just crazy for looking at other people messing up each other, you know, having some kind of, I don't even know why this is, but if we put videos on for long-tailed macaque monkeys, it looks like 12-year-old, I'm going to say boys because I'm just a little bit, probably girls too. Short videos that are glued to scenes of fighting, especially when it's monkeys that are just like them or ones that they actually knew at another time. They can't take their faces away from the video. And human beings have the same thing. it tends to be, too, that the ones that are the power players in both groups really don't pay much attention, or they pretend like they don't pay much attention. Whereas the ones that are trying to be powerful pay a lot of attention. Maybe they're trying to figure out how to get around this issue, this fighting. But it's also just like the cats out in the woods. It's a matter of survival. It's a matter of figuring out relationships. And in the case of my friend who's so good with cats, there's a natural attraction. I don't think there's an actual sign at her house that says, you know, bring your kittens here, mama. But the word does get around. Why do you suppose we are so fascinated by conflict? I think we have to have a balance in our life, and gardening sometimes gives us that balance. But at the same time, we're often looking to see what it is that's trying to eat the corn, or trying to. There was a corn earworm in an ear of corn that we got from the market the other day, and the question is, oh my goodness, who's winning? Is the corn winning, or is the corn earworm winning? The good news is that we've learned how to deal with those things, but you do have to understand that there's conflict even in the garden, at least some of the time. One of the things that I have been fascinated by this year is the amount of blue and purple and pink and red that I'm seeing in garden centers and in mixed pots, and actually even in patio furniture sometimes. So I'm going to talk about that coming up in the next hour. I want to talk about why we choose particular colors and how we make those pictures appear in our gardens. I have some suggestions for you as you are looking through the photos at supertalk.tv. You're going to see a picture of a datura called Ballerina, which is a very doubled up, beautiful purple, very dangerous datura, but the flower is lovely. You know, the daturas are the flowers that stand up, and of course the angel trumpets hang down. The plants look a lot alike, but the flowers present themselves differently, and that's how you know the one from the other. But we're also going to be looking at plumbago and duranta and blue daisy volvulus, all in that purple sort of blue area. Those colors do one set of things to us. But then again, got the pinks and the reds. You know, the reds are all about war and peace and all of these things, passions of various levels that are extreme. Whereas the pink tends to be the more comforting color, and one that tends to be a little bit more like us, perhaps, more trying to be that even keel in the garden. So we'll talk about some of that coming up in the next hour. And of course, we've also got lots of time to talk about your particular garden issues. I think that we have some real good questions that are going to pop in. Something to put in the pot with the blistering heat. She's so right.
It was a chilly weather, right?
I'm telling you, Andrea's. We're gonna be out there with the ice chips as opposed to the chilies. But it's a really beautiful set of flowers. Of course, she always does have beautiful things. With the mandevilla that gets blistering hot in the blistering sun in the afternoon. Any ideas? Well, right off the top of my head, I would say, because it is a mandevilla, I would say look at something like lantana that's going to be a little stiffer and maybe hold in place a little bit more. But we'll see what else. You'll have some ideas for us, I'm sure, and you'll let me know what Andrea should plant in the container with mandevilla where it gets such blistering hot sun. So many things to think about. One of the questions that came on my text line, on my personal text line this week, was about why do I keep talking about cloches? Aren't cloches going to just hold the heat in? Well, if it's a bell jar, then yes. But if it's a wire structure, if it's a set of PVC pipes that has shade cloth on it, it's not going to really change the temperature inside other than to cool it just a little bit if you don't have as much sun blasting through there. It's another case, I saw some this week that are on the timers, the cloches pull over to take care of the afternoon. I thought that's so fancy, I would love to do that, but I really do think that the plants that we grow for the most part can put up with a lot of nice, good, old-fashioned sun and heat, except for that middle of the day to maybe early evening. We need to give them just a little bit of a break. One of the things that I wanted to bring to you today also are the different kinds of angel wing begonias. So if you've got pictures of those, send them in to me. I'm enjoying an orange one that I didn't know was going to bloom. Meanwhile, please stick around for more garden yak and lots of fun and some pretty good old music, too. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Homeowners, Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
When guys like me separate from the military, we tried to move forward. But to truly move forward, we need to take care of our bodies and our minds. I finally understood that after I went to VA. I saw the difference it made to have providers who understood what I've been through and know how to help. I'm getting the highest quality health care at the lowest cost. And I'm telling every veteran I know that taking care of yourself is the strongest thing you can do. Get what you've earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Hey, this is...
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal. On Super Talk Mississippi.
Well, it vanished. Yeah, it did. A submersible, a vehicle, uncovered secret structures in the Antarctic Ocean, and then it vanished. Now, that's a good story. And it, in fact, is still, they sent it there in 2022, under the Dotson Ice Shelf in West Antarctica. Never had anything gone there to explore. The result really was about the dynamics between the fast melting rate and the status of that whole issue between the western and eastern portions of the ice shelf. They sent them back in 2024 to catalog the changes, and it has disappeared.
Giant squid ate it.
something got it. Now, I feel confident, because this is a story from Popular Mechanics, that it will in fact be resolved. This is not a conspiracy theory for the rest of time. However, it is kind of interesting to consider how do things like that just disappear? How do you lose track of them? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it was funny. I was watching a documentary the other day, and it was about the nuclear age and how all of the planes would be crisscrossing and flying all the time and carrying hot nukes. And, you know, there were quite a few disasters where they had to dump them.
Yes.
You know, and finding those things was actually very difficult, even if you kind of knew where they were. But one fascinating thing was it was Charles Lindbergh's son who piloted a solo submersible, who found one of the nukes off the coast of Spain. And he was, I mean, like, they haven't done a very good job of finding these things. So apparently the ocean floor is not only deep, but it's very complex.
And things change a lot.
Yeah, and it changes a lot, too, with, you know, things that move around. But I found that fascinating that Lindbergh's son was the one who was piloting a submersible back in, I think, mm-hmm. the 60s, you know. I mean,
yeah.
He looked at the thing,
and
he'd gone deeper than anybody had ever gone.
We knew James Cameron wasn't the first, by any means, but good question. Andrea, I have a couple of ideas for you. I was thinking about this during the break. If I have a container of Mandevilla and I want to add to it, I want to add a different size flower, a different sort of flower. So vinca would be a logical choice, but it's going to be a flower of the same type, just smaller. Why not angelonia? That's going to be very different looking. And absolutely have a different form because it's a little bit spiky, and it will obviously, you can get lots of different colors. There are several new angelonias, in fact, that are just beautiful, and I think we'll do a very good job with for you in that container. If it turns out that it's too hot there, you can always go to the vinca because there are some of those that trail, and there also are some of those that have different size flowers. Some of them are smaller, some of them are larger, in every color. You could go contrast or go along with a matchy-matchy thing. Either one would be lovely. I like matchy-matchy containers sometimes. Talking to cat lover and gardener in Madison about the berry-looking things that they found in their yard, and I'm asking if you cut one in half yet. There are a couple of choices. This could be a gall, but it could also be a structure for propagating, for example, parasitic wasps and stuff. So I want you to cut one in half and show me what that looks like, okay? Randy's in Starkville. Aha! This is another one of those really good questions about no female flowers on squash. And indeed, I've said before, we often have too many male flowers at the beginning of the season, and the females come along in the second round of flowering. He moved them to the big garden in full sun, and the problem was solved. So time and a little bit more sunlight brought on the female flowers for Randy in Starkville. So that's great. Very good news. Very, very good news. Let's see what else we got going on here. Y'all are full of fun today. Lots of things to talk about. I wanted to make sure that I tell you a little bit about this whole color business. Not just because I did write a pretty good book about the Nonstop Color Garden, which I think is still available in the major retailers, but it's been a number of years. You may have to order it online. One of the things that I got a chance to do was to think about color all through the garden, what the point of it is, and then, quite frankly, how we're going to use it a little bit more effectively. I really do think that one of the reasons we have so much yellow in the garden, not only because the flowers are intensely attended to attract pollinators, and so yellow does that on a very good way in the same way that red does, just depends on what bug it is. But when we talk about yellow in the garden, we're talking about a bright color that gives us a lot of optimism and has a very positive flair to it. Red and pink are not so much that way, okay? Red, as we say, is about passion, so is white. They're both very passionate colors. But pink is kind of the middle ground of all of that, and it has that effect on you in the garden. If you walk in and all the flowers are red, you will feel that the environment is quite warm. I went to a wedding once where the bride and the attendants wore various shades of blue. It was not a first wedding. And all the flowers were red. There were red anthuriums, and there were red poinsettias. It was just bright red. And it was such a warm environment, even though they were wearing blue dresses, which you would have thought would be a cooling influence. Those red flowers kind of ran over everything. And that's not a bad thing. It's actually very, very positive choice. But when we talk about our color, my own favorite color, orange, these days, it tends to be my favorite one. I think it's both because it is optimistic in the way that yellow is, but orange is more engaging. You're not as likely to just walk past it. You're more likely to stop and say, oh, look at that hibiscus. That orange flower is really dramatic. Or look at that lovely dress. What a beautiful orange plaid. You know, there's just a difference about orange that it does that for us in the garden as well as in other parts of our life. While red is extreme and can at times connote an almost violent passion, even in plants, pink is really... pink is the color of unconditional love. It is devoted. It is loyal. And so that, I believe, is why, because we feel those things, that's why we use those colors in the way we do. Usually, we'll use pink as a color of dominance, but we will also use a red as a color of contrast and a color of pop, even if those are the only two that we're using. Then we have to get into purple and whatnot a little bit later on. But that's a good start on color for today. You all are doing a great job here. Can I plant crookneck squash, summer squash now in a raised bed, or should I wait until August? Kathy in Zone 8. I'm going to go ahead and plant now and save some seeds just in case they either don't make or we have a really brutal series of weather that takes them out. You can certainly plant them again over the next several weeks. So I wouldn't have any problem with that. It's the same thing with when we talk about next month, we begin planting beets. But you don't have to plant all your beets at once, and you probably don't want to unless you're, you know, making borscht to freeze or something. But you can plant them over several weeks. And then if one set of plants doesn't do as well, or if one does better, then you know for the next year what's going to work better in your garden. But it also gives you the opportunity to harvest over a long period of time. So I say go ahead and plant that summer squash now and intend to plant some more in a few weeks. Greg's in Vaughan. He's wondering about getting those tomato suckers to grow. He says, I've always just stuck it in the ground, but not always much success for me that way. That's true. I agree with you. That's been my experience. It's not like a fig. We always talk about the fact that you can prune figs and basically take a 4-inch cutting off the tip of one of the things you just pruned off, stick it in the ground, and it will grow a fig. You know, it'll make a roots and turn into a small plant. Now, I will tell you, sometimes when you do that, that fig's going to grow sideways instead of straight up. That happens with a lot of things, but it's still a good way to get one started. Tomato suckers, a lot of people will, even though we know that the roots in water are going to be kind of fine and fine textured and many, many of them, a lot of folks have good success rooting those suckers in water. And I would suggest, since you've not had good success the other way, I would suggest trying that with at least a few of them. I might put a couple of drops of fertilizer in the water, and that's really about all. Just keep it indoors so that the whole thing doesn't heat up. You don't want the water to boil out on the porch. But if you will keep them indoors, you'll get some roots in about a week, and then you'll be able to move on into getting them someplace else. Yeah, I thought that was a yellow watermelon. Oh, that's pretty. I know who sent that. Oh, my goodness. That's lovely. That is really pretty. Where'd everything go? There it is. I have to look at this. I'm sorry. I'm having technical stuff of my own here. Is everything okay there, Lance?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well,
I think you're a little froze up here on the video, but we can deal with that at the break.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's what I thought happened. Okay. Well, that's fine. Y'all have to understand this is called inside baseball.
It happens during the week too. You're not going to be immune from a frozen feed here and there. It does happen. We'll refresh it.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
As soon as I find it, we'll do that. But any rate, back to what I was telling you about. I wanted also to mention, in talking about the purple, the blue, and all of the wonderful colors that we see so many more of, we're actually seeing things like red yuccas and brightly striped. I had a lovely opportunity to see some marginatas, the dracaenas that have the pretty stripes on the edges of their leaves. Those were red and purple. They were so pretty. Lovely, lovely plants, and something to be considered for everything that you're doing. Don't give yourself the chance of changing. Don't change your mind about things. Give yourself the opportunity to give yourself an addition, you know. I think really putting in some more color rather than less, it definitely helps. Let's see now. the welcome sign for the cats. It has a stem end in that the structure that we're cutting in half. So that doesn't really help me. I'm curious. There's nothing on the other side of the fence. There's nothing on. It's an interesting thing. I really appreciate that. I'm really into this. I want to find out what this is, but it doesn't look like I would expect for the structure that has the wasps in it, and it also doesn't really look like a structure of a gall. So if you are a wood person, you're a specialist in tree galls and tree forms, let me know what this one might be. Be happy to take that advice from you. It's interesting, though, they're absolutely just flat inside with maybe a stem. Okay, somebody will help us too.
We also have a call, yeah, whenever you get a second.
All righty, you tell me. Who is it?
Well, we have Mr. Jim from SoSo. He's got his tomatoes cured up nice from all the advice that you've given, but he also has some watermelon questions now. So, Jim, you're on.
Okay. Hey, Jim.
Good morning, Garden Mama.
Good morning. What's going on today?
I got some big, beautiful yellow-meated watermelons. I mean, they are big and beautiful. But when you open them up, they have no taste to them.
Huh. That's usually too much water as an issue. Not always, but a lot of times it will be. You'll just think they got too much water while they were ripening. Is their color good?
Well, yes, ma'am. I just think, you know, we had some water this year.
Oh, yeah. You are right about that.
Well, I appreciate you.
That's really the only thing I can think of that will do that, because we've certainly had enough hot weather, and we've certainly, you know, we've had plenty of water, but sometimes when there's too much water, it does affect the fruit.
Like I said, it's just like eating air. There's no taste to it at all.
I'm so sorry.
But y'all have a good weekend, and Fletch, you take care, brother.
Thank you, sir. Always good to hear from you.
You know, one of the things that we oftentimes wonder about is what's going to happen. And sometimes when you know, you've seen people in the markets thump those watermelons, you know, looking for the one that rings hollow. And so unless these were picked too early, which I can't imagine he would do, they've been growing, you know, watermelons in that part of the world forever. But that's the only thing other than just too much water during the growing time. If you happen to be growing melons, what we're usually looking for is the stem end of the plant where it goes on to the melon will just start to dehydrate slightly. And that's when you know that the growth has ended and the ripening is going on, and it's up to you at that point to decide when to cut it. Obviously, if you leave it too long, it will turn to compost in your field. So you don't want to go too far, but you do want to give it time for the warmth to get to there and help it ripen up. But that sound of the hollow ring on a watermelon is one of those things that I don't know if they teach it in school, but they should, because everybody needs to know how that sounds. That would help us all, I think. I'm going to have to reopen the text line here in a minute. Something has fallen apart on me. I apologize for that.
It's always
we're using,
fun.
Well, we're using my old thing, so it's another world in here.
Well, you asked on the berries or on the seeds, and did you cut in half? She goes, it has a stem end. My house seems to have all cats welcome sign too.
And I did get to that part.
Okay.
I have to ask though. Do you recognize this? I don't recognize it. You've seen more things in the woods than I have.
I mean, it almost looks like a seed from a persimmon or something. I mean, I've seen something like it. I just never knew what it was. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have to say yes, but I have no idea what I'm looking at.
Okay. Well, then it's not just me.
Yeah, yeah.
The ones that are parasitic wasps, the structures look like that, but they are not usually that red. And I just don't, she said her neighbor's trees don't have any of this in it, and I'm just really kind of stumped. When we talk about galls and wasps and those things, generally speaking, if there's two, there's 15, you know. You see them somewhere nearby, but we're just not getting a chance to
it just
do
looks
that.
Like almost like an acorn in, you know, without the hat. But an odd color
from the inside.
Yeah, from the inside.
You have stumped us. Occasionally around here we play Stump the Horticulturist. Today we're playing Stump the Host, and we have stumped her. So I'm going to see what I can find out as we take a little bit of break. We'll be right back.
Ça fait pas rien, quoi c'est ça dit, tu vas venir avec moi dans la maison, finir tes jours dans tes bras avec ton aigle.
M. Mississippi farmers raise over 800,000 head of cattle each year. We take care of our livestock so you get what's good for your family on your table. We are only one of thousands, but we are united as one to grow the food, fiber, and shelter you need every day. Mississippi needs farmers. The Farm Families of Mississippi.
Visit mspropane.com to learn more about propane as a safe, reliable fuel. Learn more about grilling safety, installation safety, general safety, and just how efficient propane gas is. Visit mspropane.com for more information. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's mspropane.com.
On this particular photo, I'm going to blast it all over the place and we'll find out what this is. And then we'll all go, oh, of course. We'll solve the mystery, but it won't be right this minute. I apologize for that. There's no seat inside. We get that. And the cut edge is turning black, so it's quickly withering away, but we don't know what this is. Okay, somebody will tell us. Somebody will tell us. One of the best parts about being a gardener is that there's always somebody else to tell you something.
Jim said it may be a chinkapin. I'm going to look it up.
It just doesn't look like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know.
Doesn't look like that to me. But I certainly don't know everything by any means. I have been fascinated this week by how fast I'm getting new growth on those beautiful cane begonias that I've been talking about. The angel wing that is in supertalk.tv today is a bright red one. But of course, you know, I'm stuck on orange. I've been watching the orange one. But again, we go back to the pinks. And if you think about the pinks, the pink really is the color that we're all eager for you to understand how much we love. Everybody wants pink. Everybody wants to have that steady, measurable color. I had a friend who said that yellow in the garden made her nervous, and everything that she grows, that she grew in that garden, was either pink or white. And it was quite lovely, but you sort of wanted to take a nap. You know, you need a little bit more color here and there to keep things a little bit more interesting. Even yellow in my case is okay. She was not one to do that. She didn't like the yellow at all. So now, when we talk about what we're going to do for the fall garden, I hope that you are ready to think about, to think about making some space in your either container beds or your garden beds, any place you're going to do this, for a mixed green bed. I don't want you to plant that today, but if you don't have enough, nitrogen, for example, if your bed has not been growing everything super, or if you have just let it play out, growing squash and tomatoes and one thing and another, so you know it's used up all of the nutrients that were in it, this is really the best time to give yourself a chance to do something different. Give yourself a chance to put on a couple of inches of organic matter. It might be your own leaf mold, might be, I don't know, could be something that you bought in a bag in the form of soil conditioner or a compost. Could be something made for this. You know, there's some very good products around on this market we're going to be talking about here in the next few weeks that are made for building beds, and I know that they're going to do a good job for you, but why not go ahead and get all of that ready, so then when you do get ready to plant, you're ready. You've got it all done already. And if you want to order some seeds, now, seeds are still expensive, but there are more available than there were right after the pandemic, for example. That's still to say that if you like rainbow Swiss chard, you're probably going to want to order those seeds and have them ready for yourself. So do that. Give yourself another little bit of information, too. Try something different. Why not? Give yourself that chance. In my case, it's always going to be another kind of kale. I don't really like super curly kale, but I like dark kale. And I also like the ones that have, frankly, just a little bit less green to them. Because it's going to be just a different flavor, a different look at things. Now, when we're looking at Datura, which is what happens to be on the screen right now, a lot of folks go, I don't know that plant. Why do they call it golden berries? It's purple. Well, it's also called China Doll. Strangely enough, plants have names that people give them because the flowers themselves, the purple flowers, are sort of China Doll looking. If you're looking at it with your eyes crossed, it looks like a beautiful fabric that you might associate with Chinese brocades. On the other hand, when the flowers go and the gold berries form, you can see why it's called golden berry. It's a beautiful plant either way. It is a tropical plant. It's like plumbago in that if you have it in the right circumstance with the right protection, you will get it to survive most winters in zone 8. But it's also very difficult to understand why people don't just take another cutting off of it and keep it going for the whole year, because that's much, much more likely to work for you. Pretty, pretty things today. Got some lovely zinnias. This really is, I guess if we had a zinnia month, it would probably be July, wouldn't it? Such a lovely, lovely time. Beautiful things y'all are showing us today in the garden. I appreciate that very, very much. Another piece of the another end of the text line coming in in my world wants to know about that white liriope that I talk about, and is it blooming? Well, yes, it is blooming. And what we're talking about is the one that I call birthday cake. It is a white-flowered liriope, very low-growing, very small plants. It never got popular, but it is all over most of the gardens in the Deep South. You'll find a corner, even where you've got other liriopes planted, you'll find a corner somewhere back under a tree where those little white flowers are happening. I think it's one that we should appreciate more because it's easy to maintain, and when you grow it, it doesn't get any taller than, say, the old-fashioned ajuga, the old-fashioned bugle flower. So they're both really nice ground covers under trees that, frankly, don't grow a whole lot of other stuff. I think that that's a really good choice. Another question this week was about Crocosmia. What is the difference between the ones that are named Lucifer and have other specific names? What's the difference in the way they grow from the way that the orange flowered one that we all see everywhere grows? Well, the orange one needs its own space because it is aggressive. The others are not. And in fact, if you plant them together, maybe 2 years, you'll end up having all orange, not because they all turned orange, but because the orange ones did take away the space that one was having. So I think that's important to know as well. But one of the things that I'm really very fond of in that whole regard is whether or not we're going to put in flowers now, like we're going to plant more zinnias, or we're going to enjoy what we've got, or what else are we going to do for the fall. And yes, you should plant more zinnias. You should plant more sunflowers. In fact, you can plant just about everything in that spring palette of flowers in the summer the same way you can the vegetables. So don't be put off. Maybe you picked all of your zinnias one day before the weather turned on you or something. It's fine to plant more, and those you can plant from seed in the garden. Cosmos and Coreopsis and Cleomys, all those big C words. We have plenty of those to plant, and I think it's important that we all get a chance to do that. So give yourself the opportunity to plant some more flowers as well as planting, you know, frankly, planting up some really, really nice opportunities for the other things. The vegetables are great, but plant some flowers too. These are so nice. I wanted to say thanks to Dave for those beautiful flowers that we just saw at supertalk.tv. Your beds are always so nice. It's really, really nice. Just beautiful. Wonderful things. Donald says he's in Oxford. Is it time for me to trim my blueberries? They're about 6 feet tall. How far should they be cut back? Well, it depends on what you want. If you are trying to have a really full hedge for fall color, for example, because blueberries do such a beautiful job of that, then you want to prune maybe as much as a quarter of the shrub now that they've finished, you've picked everything, and shape them into a nice head shape. On the other hand, if you like having some that are very tall and you don't want any lower limbs on those, this is the time to do that too. In general, right after you finish picking the fruit is the time the blueberries begin growing for the next year and for their future. So this is the time to do that pruning. How much really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If they've not been growing well, you need to take off a little bit to encourage them to grow. So you're going to prune them and then fertilize. Maybe take off as much as a quarter there too. On the other hand, if you're maintaining, that's all you need to take off. And you may not take off that much. 6 feet may be just the right height for you. But if you want them thicker at the bottom, then take a little bit more off the top. But it is important that you fertilize them with something that is going to provide the acids that those plants need in the same way that hollies and gardenias and camellias will also need, as well as the zucchinis. We do like that. Can you propagate a snowball plant? Yes, most people don't, because it takes a good length of time. But the snowball viburnum will root from a semi-hardwood cutting. That may be now, or we may have already passed that. Just have to go out and test your plant. When we're talking about semi-hard cuttings, we're talking about the end of the branch. And if you come back about 4 or 5 inches in and wiggle it, if it bends and doesn't break, but it bends, you know, pretty easily and doesn't break, doesn't snap, then you've got a good opportunity to have some moderately well rooting growth. There's still not a real, if you want two, I would root 10 is the point, because they're not necessarily going to all root for you. But they are a good one to do. Cut that stem on a diagonal, take off the lower leaves, dip it in a little rooting hormone, and put it into a container, small container, of something that drains very well. A potting soil may be mixed with a soil conditioner or something like that. Give it the opportunity to be a little bit looser than your traditional potting soil. Then put it outside and keep it damp but not wet. And it should root in about 2 months, it would be my experience. Our peach trees are 10 feet tall, but all the fruit is on the lower half of the tree. Why and when do we prune these trees? Well, you're going to prune them in January, and that's going to solve this problem. what we're having is, when we have pruning at other times of the year, we cut off the flowers for the following spring. So that's usually what has happened in a case like this, where we're only having fruit on the lower branches, is because we prune the top of the tree at some point after it should have been pruned, that is to say when it was actively growing. We don't want to prune fruit trees when they're actively growing if we can help it. So that would be my only thing, would be to say go back and make sure that you prune next January. If you find that those limbs are very heavy, prop them up. Don't let them break, because sometimes that is a bigger problem down the way, is that you've lost a lower branch because it ended up getting too heavy. Sometimes the fruit concentration can do that. If you do have a tree that tends to have too much fruit on it when it first forms, that's when you take off every other one, when they get to be about the size of a marble, so that the tree doesn't have to try to ripen as much fruit as it might could, okay? The pruning that's done on peaches is to open up the center of the tree so that sunlight can get all the way in, and that also helps with making fruit throughout the plant. Some good descriptions of that, diagrams and whatnot, at your Cooperative Extension Service website, msucares.com. Let's see, what is this one? I'm not able to see it. Okay, I'll look at that in a minute. Now, I do think peach trees are one of the harder ones to grow. So the fact that you've got some fruit is to be celebrated. Generally speaking, the open vase shape that we're talking about for peaches needs to be established when the plants are pretty young. And so since yours are 10 feet tall already, it's going to be a little bit dicey, but you'll be able to do it. You'll be able to take care of that, I feel sure. It's just going to be, it'll be a big pruning day at your house. Let's see. Yep, zucchinis. Oh, my goodness. Cute, cute, cute. Cute, cute, cute. Zucchinis and all of that. We're talking about the ways to cook zucchini the other week. John in Waynesboro is telling us about that zucchini parmesan. I'm telling you, that's two flavors that really go together. And if you haven't experienced it yet, you need to. A couple of different ways also to use the zucchinis that you forgot about that got too big. You know, you're supposed to pick them when they're about 4 or 5 inches long and maybe the size of a good cigar. You know, not gigantic, but not huge, not tiny either. On the other hand, sometimes they get to be the size of your forearm, and at that point, those are really the ones that are great for stuffing with. You cut them in half long ways and take out the center part, cook it up with the Parmesan and onions and whatnot, and stuff it back in, put it in the oven. It's a great, great way to use those big zucchinis that your neighbors won't take. We've all got those, had those at different times during the year. That is for sure. All right, we're pretty much catching up all of this. Let's see. Yeah, we won't plant this one. That's what we think. Yep. There you go, Lance. Thank you for sending those.
I thought I got close. I might not be nailing it.
We don't know if we're right, but yeah, we're pretty confident this is not going to be
pages,
helpful.
Yeah, so.
See, everybody works here on the Garden Mama Show, including you. Thank you for being here today. We got a lot going on. Nathan's the nephew of a peach farmer, and he says 1,100 peach trees. They should definitely be able to reshape it. I have 15 and had to do that to a couple of my own. So there's the confidence that you need. Go for it. Talk to you soon. We'll be right back.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Hello, my name is...
Y'all are never at a loss for great questions. I love this. Okay. Don't tell the grandchildren. I'm trying to make my potato containers last one more week so the grandchildren can pour them out. A few of the green stems are still alive. Do you think the potatoes will have rotted since I've made them last so long, wait so long to get them dumped out? Probably not. But if I wanted to look like the smartest grandmother in the world, I would probably dig a couple of them out of there just to be sure. But on the other hand, if it is all rotted, you can begin teaching about composting. So that's probably the best advice I have. If you can possibly try one, try one. If not, well, you know, we'll let it go. That's a great idea. Corinne, you're so wonderful. What great grandmothers y'all are. Y'all are terrific. Can be so much fun. We're shifting things around in my world. I have got a kitchen garden going in some pots again, and I realized that more than anything else in the world, I just love to grow thyme. And if you all are not already growing thyme, I encourage you to do that because it just is so lovely in the summertime. It makes such a really fluffy plant, and I mean that in the best way, because it gives you plenty to, I literally have just cut it, put it into a paper bag, and let the thyme dry, and it is very, very tasty. I use thyme fresh always, but sometimes you want more of that punch, perhaps in a fish marinade, perhaps just because you like the smell of it, you want to add it to a sachet or something. You really can get a really great series set of dried leaves just by putting a bunch of thyme that you've cut off in a hunk into a paper bag. It works very, very well. I'm happy to say. Nothing too fancy about that. You know, now that we have explored hovering fish, and we understand that they do not, in fact, just sit there, perhaps we need to go further into the world of wind and waves. I really like this. There are new measuring methods. Y'all know how fond I am. I'm the person who tells you when you buy an amaryllis kit to give to someone, make sure you give them a yardstick with it so they can measure how tall the plant grows each day. I love to measure things. When this particular story crossed my desk, all I could think about was how fun this was going to be. This is a great use of lasers. Now, I know we're all in the world crazy about our lasers. We get all that. But this has photographed the airflow that is millimeters above the surface of the ocean. You'd never see this. You will never. We will never see this. But again, just like the microfin business, this action bright millimeters above the ocean waves is extremely important. This reveals to us how the wind wave energy transfer things are working together, okay? Slow short waves literally take the power of the wind that's moving across. They steal the breeze. And the long ones actually sculpt the air going the other direction. So in other words, there's a push being pulled you here that is very dramatic, that is obviously has to do with surface temperature, but also with the stability of the ocean itself. And these are going to change the way we look at things, change the models that we make, because it really is a closer measurement. It's a better way of tracking, a better way of understanding how heat and momentum and, yeah, greenhouse gases, how all this stuff goes in the margin here. This is the space between the sea and the sky. And those little millimeters are the place where the action is, apparently. We didn't know this. So now that we can measure them, I think that we will be better off. We will have a better grasp of what we're looking at. So I think that's very important. Wonderful to be able to measure something better, and always to be measuring more precisely is going to make me happy. That's for true. Nathan, you're being so nice. Thank you very much. This is something that I hope is true for everybody. Thank you, Nathan. After a week of full-blown news and disaster, talking about how beautiful people's gardens are, and listening to their stories is quite refreshing. That's why we do this. That's why we garden, and that's why we talk about it. Gardening can be very solitary. It can be a place where all those things in your head can either just disappear into the wonder of the birds and the seeds and the plants around you, or they can gather up and make you even a little bit less comfortable than you were when you walked out into the garden. So this is why we talk about it. This is why we put gardening at the forefront of not only what we do, but also the conversation. I appreciate you so much knowing that. Dave from Ripley has given me the laugh today, the lounge singer in Time. And if you don't know what we're talking about, I promise you need to go look it up. Anyway, Lance, you're going to have to do secondary things and send them out to
yes,
people.
Yes, yes, definitely.
We're going to have to send out Bull Durham today. We're going to have to send out the definition of lollygaggers. That's another one. Oh, my goodness, that's funny. You're great. Y'all are just the best. I do know that if you are starting seeds, somebody's always going to ask me after I say that, can I use my old garden soil to do this? Can I use the pots, the stuff that the plants died in? Probably not the best idea. Probably not the best idea. Here's why. Not you should, because here's the argument, you see. If I'm going to start seeds and the plant's going to start seeds, the plant doesn't have all this fancy sterile soil. The plant doesn't have control of the water that happens. Why do I have to do all this? First of all, because you're not the plant, but second of all, because the numbers are not in your favor. If you plant 40 seeds, the plant may plant 400. You know, in other words, the number that they fling into the environment will be much greater than the number that you're going to actually work on to plant. So it's important to recognize that difference. It's also because we're trying to speed things up often. The seed that drops off of my Retibida may lay there until, I don't know, next February and then come up and be perfectly fine. But if I want to plant some Retibida this fall, I want those seeds to come up. So I've got to give them a little bit more care, a little bit more attention. And yes, sometimes a sterile potting mix can really help with that particular process. So give yourself the opportunity to put you in charge of it. I hope you've heard me say before, gardeners are actors. Gardeners are, we are observers, but only to an extent. When I think of someone like John Muir, who was a naturalist, who wandered and wrote and, you know, spoke about nature, I just don't see him out there trying to figure out which of the cabbage plants to leave and which ones to thin out. You know, I just don't see that. So when I'm looking at our world, I'm looking at us as the ones who do things. We want to make the garden different. We want to make it better. We want to make it our own. And for that reason, we do things in a little bit more concerted fashion, like start seeds in a container in the house. I do have a choice, too, because I really want to take this out and just plant it. So I'm not going to do a flat full. I'm going to do small individual containers for the fall garden. That makes it much easier to transplant when the time comes. Stick around. We got a little more to go today, and I want to talk to you about why you're angry.
No, we're at the end of this, baby.
Are we? I'm sorry. I missed myself. I'll save it for next week. Thank you for being here. Thanks, Lance.
Always a pleasure, GM.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Propane heats and lights up our life, but being propane safe is vital to our peace of mind. Protect your loved ones with professional installation and propane inspection. Don't cut corners by having a family friend install. Contact your propane provider and stay safe. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com to learn more about the many uses of propane. That's mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.